Everyone for joining today, wherever you may be in the world. So you would have seen that there's articles for this month's global OD trends, and I'm just going to share in the chat the titles of those articles to remind everyone. But maybe in terms of discussion, perhaps we can have a quick poll and see what was everyone's favorite article, or which ones you may find the most interesting of the ones that we shared.
So do you want to start with that, or do you want to do a quick
Yeah,
overview?
can we start?
Do
Yeah, can we
you
just
want to do
start
a
with?
quick overview of the
Yeah, a quick
articles?
overview as well for those who maybe haven't had a chance to fully read them all.
And
So,
I'm thinking if you're using a wireless headset, it might be.
just talking into my computer. If the audio is not working, I can connect via my phone if that would be easier.
Yeah, Tanya, can you say something again? Because Hamish sounds choppy to me, but I think you sound okay. Can you just say one more thing to me?
And Gina, you sounded clear, so Hamish is
Okay,
still just a
perfect. Thank
little.
you. Okay, we'll get it sorted out then. We'll get to the bottom of this.
Okay, well, he's going to try and connect and dial in on phone, so that will maybe give us a little bit more clear audio. So with that pause and Hamish being able to give an overview of the articles, do we is it helpful? So for those of you who are kind of first-time attendees, is it helpful if we read from the newsletter the descriptions that they put in for just a highlight overview while Hamish is taking, or Craig, Gina, Selena, do you feel up to jumping in and giving an overview?
I don't mind either way. If they would like an overview, one of us can do it. I can do it, or anybody. It doesn't matter.
Yes, that would be great.
Okay.
I'm not sure if
Go
it's
for
he
it,
or she.
Gina.
The right way to
Okay.
pronounce the name.
All right. We had, let's see. So, going across our articles, we had setting transformation targets that actually drive change. So, they had 4 points there. One about targets as a minimum bar. As opposed to something they must hit, and we'll get into discussion about all of this, obviously. One's about targets as absolute versus relative to something else. One as performance goals to tied to budget or specific operation, not a process. And one was about targets across multiple dimensions. And the whole article goes through the reason to do that is to prevent things like double counting and negotiations and squabbles. And so the details in the article talk about that some more. The next one, unfortunately, was subscription required around Google exec sharing the key to ROI to Forbes. And I didn't want a subscription to Forbes. So if anybody else had one, then please jump in after I get through the other ones and you can talk about that. So I didn't read that one.
Gina, real quick for
Yeah.
folks, it looks like Hamish put a link in, and I'll put it in again for anybody who joined after he put it. When I just clicked on it, it gave me one of free 4 articles. So an opportunity
Oh,
to
nice. Okay.
connect to it. So I just added
Okay.
that back into the
Well, it
chat.
didn't give me that, and it's too late now. It told me you
Yeah.
can pay or not. So what
That's what it
probably
did when I
happened?
first looked at it. So Hamish must have a special already
Yeah,
subscribed
must have a
and
special link.
share.
Yeah, it tell me pay or don't, and I thought, okay, don't. So, but what could happen is I could have read my free article already. So anyway, okay, are you ready to jump in, Hamish, or should I just continue the
Yes.
overview and then we'll go
Yes.
back to you?
Please feel free to continue because I was a bit distracted trying to get my phone to connect. But
All right,
the audio
perfect.
should
We'll
be better now.
work on that then. All right, so now we sorted out how I can get a free article, but moving on. With somebody else, if you know that one, you can come back to that one. So then the next one was teaming supercharges collaboration. So it talked about a few different factors there, aligning around the task, the people, and their being collaborative, proactive, tolerant. And the third one was platforms, the workplace setup. And then it talked about phases to implement teaming. Initiation, integration, and institutionalization. So we can talk about how you would actually do that and the pros and cons of that approach. Then there was another article on a co-creative initiative towards open data. And that was a detailed process of how to incentivize companies and organizations to collaborate, to provide open data. And it had some arguments around how you could what that would be a value and what you could build from that, and you could spur innovation. So it had a number of different things and fairly comprehensive overview. It was talking about sustainability data that I found it interesting because it didn't, I think it would apply to any open data initiative relative to any topic. And then the last one was including your AI agent on your organization chart and literally sitting your AI right next to a box next to a person. And so it talked about the instance of generative AI being able to have creativity, empathy, in some strategic decision making. And it also talked about having to supervise it and manage it, just like you would have to. So that was the argument in favor of having AI on the org chart. And then that was the four that, again, with my subscription challenge, if anybody read the Forbes one around the Google ROI on generative AI, then please jump in. Otherwise, we can move on as our normal agenda. No? Okay,
I'm
good.
happy.
Well,
I'm
I'm not
happy
the
to
only one.
discuss. No. I'm happy to discuss the Forbes issue. I actually did just get a subscription because I was like, well, maybe this is finally my push to check out Forbes. But so far, I'm going to probably not continue with that. Anyway, the article on AI was centered around ROI and discusses how companies are capturing ROI through their AI systems, discusses some aspects of implementing, and what do you do if you're behind, the ball in terms of getting ROI from your AI systems. It gave some thoughts to what you like due diligence and senior leadership support and having tech skills in-house. So it gives kind of some basic guidance on what you want to do if you want to capture value out of ROI. Well, no, it says it talks about monetary ROI in terms of the value. It doesn't really talk too much about other values that we might be able to extract from AI, which is my main point of criticism, which we may get to at some point, but at any rate.
Thank
Well,
you.
thanks for jumping in while I sorted out those technical issues. But now we have that the quick summary. So thanks, Gina. Thanks, Selena, for that. Perhaps we could have a poll on which article was everyone's either favorite or the one they found maybe the most interesting. It's appearing on your screen now.
Got a tie right now. Give it another few seconds. And no votes for the Google article, so no one must have read it. Except for you. So hopefully, Selena, folks will jump in and we'll still just discuss it as a general topic. All right, I'm going to end it and share the results.
So, how to set transformation targets that actually drive change is the winner. I didn't vote for this one, so if there's someone who voted for this and who wants to kick off the discussion around why they chose this article of the five we had. Anyone can either feel free to jump in or raise your hand.
Well, that was the one I selected, and primarily out of attrition. I didn't find the other article really that substantive or that meaningful for me personally. And I think they did a decent job on just clarifying how you want to set your targets. And I like the notion of setting it as the minimum bar and then continuing to improve from there.
Well, I have a question for you there because I voted for that one as well, and I can say why in a minute, but that was the one thing I was kind of struggling to grok is setting it as a minimum bar, because in the article he talked about perverse incentive to avoid exceeding targets and just hitting the minimum and stopping and not moving on. And I thought, if you set a minimum bar, how is that really different? I wasn't really following all his other points. I thought were really good about
Yeah.
all the different things that happened, but that one I really couldn't grasp.
Yeah.
Anybody on why the minimum bar would be different than a target, how you'd get different results?
From the way that I interpreted that comment in the article was more like, hey, the change doesn't stop here once you hit your targets. Like, you need to continue to pull things through for much longer than just the targets. And, you know, it called to mind someone who does big transformations, who I respect his opinion a lot. And he's been really pushing on not setting targets until you can really get your arms around the whole thing, because it is the process of discovery and everything. Like, he wanted to keep budgets and targets and all of these things out of it until they really understood the thing well and advocated for that with their leadership, which he has been successful at so far, which I find magical, because I've never seen that happen in any organization. But I think that it's kind of the flip side of the same point, like set it as a low bar so that you keep on improving, or don't set the targets until you have like a better understanding of the scope of your challenge is a very important piece of things to like keep you moving in the right mm-hmm. direction and not set unrealistic expectations mm-hmm. You know, and those kinds of things. So
it's almost like a momentum aspect to it as well, right? Like, if you can get a win, you can start building on those wins and so on. And then from a change management perspective, I also wonder if, you know, you said something that's maybe too ambitious, are you going to have difficulty bringing people on that journey, so to speak? And then something, I guess, from a completely different field, I don't know how many people watch the Olympics, but there's a Swedish pole vaulter who keeps breaking the world record, and every time he's doing it by 1 centimeter increments. And so he's basically incentivized to, rather than just going for the big world record in one go, sort of, okay, every time I show up for a competition, I'm going to beat it by one centimeter. And it's, again, I guess that the idea that you do things in increments, even though you might be able to jump, it's maybe just to build and build and build. Just a sort of completely different sector.
I like that, Hamish. It's cool.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of change or a lot of transformation projects may have lofty aspirational goals. And I think this one's got a little bit more realistic around, okay, let's set a target that we're really going to achieve. And we can declare success at that point.
Yeah, that was one exclamation point on that, because that's been my observation as well. What happens is they actually do start with the multiple dimensions. The multiple dimensions are too lofty, so then they just end up in the efficiency part. And then that is what exactly he wrote about, was that you end up just, you know, everything, every transformation becomes cutting costs, which you can't cut your way to success, as we've observed in numerous situations. So I thought the way he articulated that was especially well done, which is why I picked that one.
I think the other one that's interesting as well for this is, I've worked on transformation projects and we've had targets, but you know, what targets actually, use a metaphor, make the boat go faster? You know, there might be certain targets, but are they actually going to improve the overall efficiency or the outcomes, whatever it may be, that's the actual goal? And I see sometimes that I've been on transformation projects that have started and there's still discussions months into the program on actually what are the ways you're going to define and measure this. And again, it could be that having that minimum bar is that you're actually still learning on what is the metrics that are going to actually help us say in the future, have we achieved or have we not achieved? And if you have, I guess, smaller targets, and you can actually refine it over time and say, well, hang on, this target's maybe not so applicable, we overestimated the importance, how we can pivot and focus more on this target and so on. All right, so the second one, I think, the second most voted one was the, should you include your AI agent on the organization chart? And feel free to correct me if I got that one wrong, Tanya, but I think that was number two, was 30%. And I personally chose this one, so I'm happy to jump in and start the conversation this one. And the reason I chose this was not so much for what the article said, for what sort of reflections upon me. And my sort of thinking there was, if we include, well, sort of, what is the distinction then if we include AI at Rock versus use as a process, because obviously roles and processes are supported by technology and things like that. And now we're, I guess, in this point of view, there's a fundamental change where we're saying technology is no longer something that's part of a process. It's actually now something analogous or akin to an employee. And for me, it was sort of, well, what is the line between a technology that a person works on versus a technology that now has become a person? And in that sense, is the manager of that person, what's between them and an employee who is using a tool as part of their work? So I don't know if anyone else had a reflection like that, or they had a different perspective on why they voted that. Because that was sort of the thinking I had, was in the definitions and so on. How do we make these distinctions? So does we haven't heard from, I don't think, Kimberly or Wilkner, Kara, jump in. Vincent?
Sorry, yeah. Hamish, I was going to put in the chat. I don't know if you had a chance to look at the link to the Perplexity conversation on the AI chats. I was distracted because I'm going to pop it in the link, but it was fascinating. I thought.
Did anyone else, are in a position to talk that voted for it? I'm interested because I would have put it at the other end of the spectrum, which we'll come to, but I really like to hear from someone else who voted for that one as useful. Okay, well, everyone's not in a position to talk. That's all right.
I didn't vote for it, but I think it's a really interesting way to leverage AI for decision-making systems and decision support throughout an organization. I think, for instance, you could have an AI play the voice of like a customer or an employee while you're making a decision. So you could have like an agent who plays a certain role, and that can change depending on the context. And I think it's kind of a neat way to add multidisciplinary perspectives that you might not have in terms of people who are at the table discussing these things. So I kind of like it. I don't know that I like the idea of having it in an org chart. However, I think that that having some accountability of the leaders who use those perspectives and how to and how they incorporate them in the process is like a necessary part of that conversation. So maybe the org chart serves as that purpose, but.
Yeah, that's where I kind of landed. What I was in favor of is, I thought, okay, I know, because I've been in enough conversations that the use of AI is being sneaked, because organizations are still developing what they're doing, and they don't have clear policies and they don't enable things. So plenty of people are doing things that, they're just using it anyway. And so I think that a point in favor of that is it's disclosed and would be managed, and it would start moving things maybe more in a positive direction in terms of that. So I think that's a point in favor of it. And I agree with you, what you just said. I don't know if the org chart is the best place, but somewhere, that actually acknowledges and highlights it would be probably a step in the right direction.
Well, I guess sort of what is the usefulness of it as well, right? I mean, the org chart's there partly so that people can see how teams are structured and so on. And is there a level of criticalness to knowing that this AI person, or how we want to describe it, is so critical to see we need to have it on the org chart, versus, I guess, in some organizations we're going to have other critical technologies which we don't include on the org chart. So in terms of that sort of piece of information, again, I sort of wonder, from let's say like the average employee going onto the org chart to say, okay, who's in this team, who's in that team? I do wonder if that's providing a lot of benefit or not. Anyway, maybe we can move on to another article. So I think what was the third one? So it was 20%. I didn't come recall the percentage. The article title that one was.
I think it was the open data one, wasn't it? Is that the other
Tanya,
one?
do you have the list available? Okay,
Yeah.
co-creation, co-creative and innovative toward open data. So did you want to vote for this? Do you want to start off?
That was me, or maybe
okay.
me and some other person who might not be able to talk, but I voted for that one primarily because I'm like heavily involved in getting my arms around like what data governance looks like from a compliance and regulatory perspective in the future. So I like the idea of open data to be able to create like a more holistic ecosystem that's responsive to different kinds of changes and different you know, objectives, and you know, kind of provides a mechanism of accountability for companies, and it, you know, kind of allows you to look at holistic value creation. I think that that's the main point of the article, and that's kind of my whole bent on data in general, is that like we need to use it to inform decisions, ethical decisions, sustainable, you know, decisions and these kinds of things. And I think that that open data is a neat way to do that, particularly for stakeholders who have you know, values aligned. So say you have like a company that is wanting to reduce waste, food waste, they're like, you know, Misfits Market, like the, you know, the funky fruits or something, like they might really benefit from some open data from grocery stores, where they can figure out ways to collectively reduce the footprint of waste between the organizations without having to establish the NDA and like get the partnership going and like get all the stakeholders together and do all of those things that kind of make impact lag for such a long time because decisions are so slow. So that's why I loved it.
So if you could elaborate more, because I had some questions on that, because I thought I was very impressed with the process and the, you know, the argument and the value and, you know, completely get all that. What I was puzzled about or not quite or wondering about was it didn't get into a lot around like ethics and like criminal elements. And, you know, the criminal elements are vicious and intense. And so I thought, you know, that might be a problem. And I thought it would maybe talk about that. I mean, that wasn't maybe the purpose of the article, but that was what I left questioning with.
No, that's such a good question. I had not thought about that, even as a little lawyer sitting over here. but I think that you could probably, like, what data would be able to be used in nefarious ways that would be data that you could get companies to use for open source data. Like, I'm not sure it would be like sustainability reporting and those kinds of things, like, you know, things that are actually already out in the world in various ways, and shareholder reports and things like that. So I don't know that it would be like all data that would really be like a good place for nefarious actors to like make a play. But maybe it would be. I don't know. I have to think more about it.
I was thinking not so much of robbery, which, you know, that's all happening and that's a thing. I was thinking more of setting up false narratives that are damaging to brands and you know, just things that are just simply not true. And that I was thinking of that kind of a thing, and that sort of a manipulation, kind of a information warfare is what I was thinking of.
God, isn't that the state of our world?
Exactly. That's why I was wondering. When I read the article, I was thinking, I wonder why they didn't talk about this. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's so interesting.
It makes me think a little bit about other things where there's a lot of advantages of having broader groups share information. And one of those is prediction markets as well, where the idea is that by letting different people contribute to predictions on an event occurring, we get a better idea of the actual probability. And there's things that you can look at, for example, around the presidential election in the US and even other things on whether the Fed's going to hike or hold rates or lower rates and so on. And it's one of those things where there's a lot of value if people do contribute, but are the incentives there for people to do so? And I've worked in organizations where maybe this hasn't opened up, but I've previously in the banking sector, and there's a lot of talk around things like open banking. But a lot of organizations are very risk averse, especially in sectors like that, and don't necessarily want to be fast. They don't want to be leaders. They're maybe happy to be fast followers, or even sit back and let others take risk. So I am sort of curious to hear if anyone has thoughts on the risk appetite that, you know, the organizations who might participate in this would have, and, you know, how can that maybe be overcome as well? Any thoughts on those? I was clear in what I was, if that was clear in what I was saying.
I'm very familiar with the concept of prediction markets. I don't know how to connect it to this though. I hadn't thought about that previously. I mean, you're obviously buying your opinion. You're buying, you know, you're saying, I think this is what it will be, and you're buying your opinion. So it would, I mean, yeah, that it seems like that would be logical, that this would help that. But I how it would work.
Well, I guess just in terms of the openness of the data, that the uh-huh. prediction market requires a level of open data as well.
Yeah.
But you do, I mean, it's just an example of how open data can be beneficial. But in terms of the article, again, sort of the question I would have is, I think there are a lot of advantages, but I would see a lot of companies or organizations looking at this and really taking a very risk adverse lens to it, let's say. And
yeah.
I guess my question would be, so how can we, what can we do to try and overcome that?
Yeah, I think you're saying what I said a different way. I could see an easy option for information warfare here, and why would I bother?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that information warfare, even just, I guess it's almost coming back to the incentives or targets, things of that nature. Do people have the right incentives? Do we allow people to take risk, or is risk such a good weighting, or that things like this, which could provide a lot of opportunity, there's limited appetite because the way risk is perceived or managed, or people are held accountable, is that trying something like this is just for your career or whatever it may be, there's just too much risk for someone to take on.
I think the risks here end up being kind of amorphous of like, what is that going to do? Like, how would the information warfare be used? How would it be, you know, incrementally different from the data that's already out there? You know, like, do the information warfare generals really care much about having it grounded in data? I don't know. So I wonder, I think, for me personally, I would need to like really think through like what the data means, what putting it out there means, and like come up with a pretty, I don't know, it would be, I think it would be really an amorphous perspective on like what the risks would be. I think the benefits are clearer to me.
I think it's the thing that the study or the article talks about, a study that was done in the Nordic countries. And maybe it also speaks to the type of culture that you might have there versus other parts of the world, and maybe it's a more high trust environment and so on. So maybe that these are some of the prerequisites you need to have. So we had two other articles.
What we normally do at this point is go to the one that bothered us, I think, is the normal format. Is that right, Tanya? Unless we just wanted to talk about it, but we want to see if the other ones were bothering articles.
It caused tension.
Yeah,
tension. That's it. Tension. Thank you. Sorry, wrong word. Tension is what we're looking for.
All right. We can see if folks have an opinion about that.
I'm interested to see if this correlates to the other. On the poll or not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's why I threw up the reminder. See if it correlates.
Well, now you're gonna have to go back and talk about almost all the articles because it's a split.
That's usually how it works.
All right, let's share.
All right. So how teaming collaboration. Yeah. Fair one, and then three ways per second. But anyone who chose how teaming supercharges collaboration, want to kick us off on why they voted for that one? Maybe someone we potentially haven't heard from so far.
If no, I wasn't, I voted for it, so I'll go if no one else does, but I don't want to be the only one who talks. So if anybody else wants to jump in, please do so.
I also voted for this one, and I'm happy to start us off. I voted for this one because I have been thinking a lot about what is a team more. I was previously working at a bank where we were doing a big agile transformation. I know in the article they stressed that this is not talking about teams and in terms of an agile structure and following agile project methodology. It's talking about teams in a, I guess, a more broader sense. We were developing new teams there, and people were saying, oh, but we need this person in this team for X reason. And at that stage, we were in the pandemic where no one was in the office, everyone was working virtually. And my sort of thought was, well, at this point, what is really a team? Because nothing's stopping you going into Outlook. There's nothing stopping you going into Microsoft Teams, whatever collaborative tool you have, and still messaging that person. Just because you suddenly, you know, it's been a team doesn't mean that you can't contact someone else and still collaborate with them. But I think a team is something more than that, and it's something around sharing a common goal. And they do stress in the articles the need to have a common goal, and the fact that the goal is beyond what one person as an individual could deliver upon as the act of collaboration on, and so on. So I think it's very helpful, I think, and for me, in terms of advancing my own thinking. But it did cause tension because I had been critical in the past of this idea that a team is important, because I, in the pandemic, when people weren't necessarily sitting in a team in that sense, I was more critical. But I think now I can definitely see the value of the team and sort of that holistic sense as a way to bring people together and work towards a common goal and so on. So I don't know if anyone else had similar reflections. Gina, I don't know if you had a completely different reason for why it caused you tension or similar thinking to me. I'd be keen to hear your
thoughts. Along the same lines, I thought this would be so useful if they had just taken the realistic perspective. So they went through like three things: the task at hand, you can solve some unique complex problems. No, you can't. Some of them are tedious and boring and you've done it 10 times already. Second one's people. They're aware of their limitations. Well, sometimes they're not aware of anything, never mind their limitations. I mean, they just don't know, right? And then the other one's platforms. Well, they never work. They don't connect. You know, and I thought this would be such a good framing of information if you had just gone about it the other way, right? And then initiation, the trust building, you know, start with dysfunction or people don't know each other, you know, the integration, building evenness in the programs. How, you know, didn't say so. And same thing with institutionalization. I mean, even when you successfully embed something, people quit and move on and it all just kind of dissolves, right? So I thought this is I really liked the organization. And then, you know, then it just didn't kind of follow from that. So that was why I voted for that one.
And Gina, I was the same way. It was too conceptual, and it didn't get down to some practical suggestions.
In real life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So not to be, it's just the reality, you know, at least one of the things I said is usually present.
Yeah. So Gina, that would have been a good reframing of it
I think that's why I like the first article so much, because he just reframed it. He's like, here's what transformation looks like and here's what's actually happening. And that, you know, and that's useful.
Did anyone else vote for this article?
The thing that I kind of took for like the conceptual, I think your points are all totally fair, and I didn't enjoy the article very much, but I do kind of think that there is something to be said about maybe some cool like learning and development opportunities by approaching something like that, where you give an opportunity for leaders to lead like special groups of like some sort of project, like some sorts of like pet projects or things that need to be done or whatever it happens to be, and putting together kind of like crack teams that wouldn't normally get together to discuss issues. I think that can be like a really cool development opportunity for people, you know, networking opportunity for people. So to me, I kind of like put it into like an L&D bucket more than I did like, oh, this is how we're going to run things, you know?
I That's a great suggestion. Yeah, because I suppose if you put it in an L&D bucket, then someone would be thinking, okay, this is how it should be, but it's not how it actually is. But yeah, good
well, and
point.
maybe the implementation is kind of like not really the thing. Maybe it's more like it's just like creating a container for, you know, outside the box teaming or something like that. I don't know.
I did find one of the key examples they did cite as an interesting example of a team where it was from the, I think back in the 70s, when NASA did a report, and I'm just actually pulling it up now so I can cite it exactly. It's talking about a team of 50 industry insiders as well as 20 astronauts, scientists, and psychologists. And we're talking about 70 people there. I'm not sure most organizations are putting together teams of 70 people. Yeah, it's sort of interesting. And for us as an organizational designers, is, you know, an example of the 70 person team, rather, sorry, is maybe a little bit far-fetched. We had some other articles that caused tension. So we had the Google one I saw as one of them, and I know a lot of people had issues accessing that, but I don't know if that was chosen because of the access issue, or someone actually didn't have the chance to read and had some comments. So that person wants to jump in and discuss their reason. This is their opportunity. Otherwise, we can move on to one of the other articles. I think it was with the AI agent, I think, reappear as one of the tensions, and then the open data as well. So,
the AI agent one. Okay. Sorry, I was mixing things up here. You want the AI agent one? Because the other one was my challenge, subscription challenge. The AI agent one, here's where I got, I didn't vote for that one. But what I got a little bothered with, because, you know, I'd said previously, I thought, okay, some way to disclose and manage, you know, some steps, that would be great. Because people don't really know, I think it's good to know, because it can be a little creepy. You know, if you're familiar with it, you know when you're being AI'd, but if you're not familiar with it, you don't. And I think that is great. Any transparency is good. So that, wherever you put it. But what bothered me a little was, now they, I'm going to get his exact words, tasks that it functions as a coworker with creativity, empathy, and strategic decision-making. No, it doesn't. I mean, there's just not there, you know, it's not, I mean, there's points where they have, you know, there's little things, right? Like reading voices on calls and call centers. And, you know, there's these little pockets here and there. So that was the one where that would have been my second one I would have voted for, thinking that's really a stretch. You know, to be able to say that's because that is why I think it has kind of stopped at like automation and, you know, some things like that, because it can't do that. And so I think adjustment expectations have to be recalibrated, you know, to get to the next level of evolution. So.
So I do disagree with that a little bit, just because the way that it is helping me make strategic decisions is like my conversation with it. So I use it like a thought partner to get more information on like whatever the particular topic is. So I think that using AIs, and whether it's like one of the general ones because you're not putting any sort of like company data or reference around it, or whether it's an in-house AI model, I think can be really useful, because then you can have a conversation with your data. You can take different contexts and smush them together to try to come up with a more well-rounded perspective. So I do like that. I wouldn't want an AI agent to be making those strategic decisions, but I would be okay if an AI agent said, hey, here are the things that you all care about, and here's like some context, and here's some ways to think about it, and here's, you know, a popular framework for analyzing such an issue, and, you know, it advances your decision-making process.
Yeah, very fair. I think I went to the empathy part. I think that was where I got a little stuck.
Like, it's a robot.
and then after that, it was kind of like, no, this is not, but yeah, they're very fair to help and support. And like I said, I saw a lot of value in that, and just starting this conversation around transparency, because I think that is most important.
Absolutely.
It's funny though, because when people do, and this is maybe a quite specific example, but I have seen people are aware that they're engaging with a chat bot versus a human. they do try and game the system, and there's been examples where people are trying to negotiate discounts on retail websites of the channel, and then like they might not get very far per person, but they know that they can be get to a certain point, and there's now scripts going around on how you can negotiate with the chatbot on certain websites to get a discount that you wouldn't have otherwise had access to. I guess that it's very limited decision making, but as an example of, I mean, so it's in which that chatbot operates, but it's still the chatbot making some decisions in some sense on giving that discount. But it can go both ways. I guess the transparency for the organization is that, yes, it, I guess, makes people more comfortable, and also people can try and find ways to game systems that a person might not be so receptive to. Moving on, we had, we're trying to recap the articles we discussed. So we've had the teaming as a source of tension, we've had the AI agent, and I think open data was one of the other ones that was voted for in terms of source of tension as well. Tanya, do you have the list again? Was that also on 20%?
We talked about, I think the only one we haven't talked about is that Google one,
Google?
I think so.
Anyone want to jump on the Google, someone who maybe voted for it?
I did, but if someone else wants to
I mean, Vincent, Kimberly, usually, sorry if I'm not pronouncing the name correctly, feel free to jump in as well. Open forum, this is fine.
All right, hearing none, I'll say, I just thought it was very, it struck me as something that was written by a big consulting firm for big consulting firms. I thought that it was very, like, having it geared, like, around ROI, putting out this data that I'm not sure is very representative, and those kinds of, I think there's some good principles in there. Like, yeah, get your data in order if you want to take advantage of AI. Like, yes, that is absolutely important. And companies, by and large, in my experience, need to get their data together better anyway. So he offered up some no-brainers. But otherwise, I just kind of felt like it was more of a marketing piece than it was like a thought-provoking, like, this is how we could be thinking about this different in an organizational design context. But
it is, I mean, it's not fully related to the article, I'm getting a little bit tangential now, but it is funny how often I've seen it come up in my career. Oh, what does Google do? What does Facebook do? What does Apple do? Kind of ignoring the fact that these companies are very special, and yes, they're leaders in their industry and so on, but just because they do something a certain way doesn't mean that another company in another industry is going to be able to replicate what they do. But I guess these consultants who wrote this article are very aware that that's a mentality that that exists, and they're trying to tap into that, I suspect.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because I feel like it's the wrong aspect to tap into. Like, when you think about, like, the complexity of all your organizations, and, like, because AI is contextual and the complexity of your organization, like, you can't just take best practices from whatever other company and pour it into your business model. It just doesn't make any sense. Like, that you need to be able to have, like, the rich context of how you do business and the way your company is structured and the things that you do well to compete, and your, you know, human mix, like, you know, oh, okay, so people are seeing ROI. What if they have a workforce that is, like, completely averse to change? What if everyone at that particular place is particularly scared that they're going to lose their jobs to AI? You know, like, it just doesn't, lacks context. It's kind of, yeah. But it's a very handsome picture of him in the middle of it.
we might be getting some more topics in the future about Google, because there's some discussion about Google having to be broken up for being too monopolistic as a company. That's again a bit tangential, but
if they are smart, they would just go ahead and do it themselves. I mean, that everybody learned from the whole, it's Accenture now, but it was Arthur Anderson, you know, the whole thing got taken down, And so that, and then the GE as well, there are now four different, you know, so there's a whole path there that, that seems to be wiser legally and just from a business standpoint to be a collection of smaller units. So yeah, might happen.
Gina, I agree with you.
Yeah. 100%.
I mean, return on investment, I find it a concept, and I must admit, I didn't get a chance to see this one because of the paywall as well, but ROI, I mean, I've heard people talk about ROI and then both in terms of their cash savings, but then, for instance, oh, we became more efficient and so on, but then yeah, you might have got more efficient doing a manual task, whatever, whatever. What did you actually do with that time gained? And I'm not too sure about the US, but I'm in Canada. I know in Canada, per person or per worker productivity has actually been decreasing in the last couple of years. And so maybe that the returns on the AI haven't come through yet, but in terms of the productivity that we're seeing, the economy overall, that has not been so much. Because I think in the US, there's still on a work per worker basis, productivity growth, but it's interesting that we have a little bit of a disconnect there, and I wonder what the source is there as well. Is it executives overestimating the actual return on investment? Is it something completely different? But
yeah, that's an excellent point. And like, really, like AI couldn't, what if we were to do this right, would productivity really be the measure that we want? How about we make our lives better and easier at work? How about it's not such a grind? How about it allows us to enjoy our lives better, actually facilitates going to a 4-day work week or like something magical? Like, where's that? Like, that's the ROI that I want to see.
Yeah. It's interesting to say that because a couple of years ago, the New Zealand government was trying to look at something called the well-being budget. And instead of trying to measure the performance of the economy in terms of just GDP growth, can we actually measure it in terms of what makes people's lives better? Is it more free time? Is it people are living longer or they're healthier, using other indexes just, rather than just GDP growth as a measure?
How about let's use it to add meaning to work? Like, wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah. Well, I think Selena, I think you have an excellent point. And I think this is exactly the same thing with that first article we read. It's the goals are too lofty. You know, it's like our quality of life. You know, what you need to do is if this works, we're all going to be working this many hours. You know, it has to be, it doesn't get set like that. And it's probably intentional because, you know, it's there's a lot of benefit to, you know, people kind of working really hard. to maybe not to themselves, but probably to other people. So might be just too hard to do. Nobody wants to jump in there and say that. Now, Hamish, your productivity. What is there a corollary? And now you got me interested. I don't know the answer to this with like engagement or satisfaction or something like that. So is the productivity? Are people happier as well as more productive, or are Canadians less productive and happier? Do we know? I mean, it'd be interesting to know.
Let me Google that. I'm going to try and see if I can find it very quickly. I don't know if there's sort of a happiness index or something.
Or engaged at work or something. I don't think it's happiness. I think it's I think it'd be engagement or something along those lines.
It's been going down. I can see here. I just found an article. I mean, I don't know how authoritative the source is, but it's been going down. And last year was 6.92. And then the years prior, it was more in the low sevens. So that has been going down. Maybe a reflection on the cost of living increases and so on.
That's everywhere, though. Everyone's paying. I think. Yeah. So, all right, then.
So,
Selena, is this your first time with us?
No, this is my second time.
Second. Okay, great. All right. Good to have you.
Oh, thanks. I love this. I had so much fun last time. I wasn't going to miss another one.
Okay. We have a few minutes left. Maybe we want to have a quick summary from everyone, or maybe your takeaway points, something of that nature.
We'd like to do that, and selfishly, if we can. We have a working team. I think our meeting is the 11th or 12th of September. And we are going to address feedback that we've gotten around these calls, because we've done this for a while. And we want to be sure, but we haven't really looked at the design of it in like a long time. And so we're going to do that. So selfishly, if we can do the summary, and then if anybody would just even put it in the chat for those of you that haven't been able to come off mute, Tell us any feedback you have, any ideas you have, so that the working team can take this forward and improve.
Yeah, this was our very first virtual offering that we developed back in 2016 when we discovered Zoom. So we've been offering this conversation now for, we're coming up on eight years.
Wow.
Do you think that the barriers to participation is because of like so many articles? Does that just like feel like too much to people?
We got a little feedback on that, and it's perfectly okay not to, we'll do the summary. We got a little feedback on that. We got a little feedback that we feel like we wrote down what's going to happen, but we still got feedback that people didn't really know. So we've got to address that and just kind of figure out a way to make it a little more user-friendly in terms of how we do these summaries and how we engage people.
Is it maybe even, I mean, like bolding the line and just reading the invitation just to refresh my memory, but is it even something like bolding the part, please make sure you've read the article, just to
make
that part clear? Because I'm just looking at there's a bit of a block of text there, and you see it underneath the meeting idea and so on, and it might just be people just...
Well, I envision a couple of things. We're going to come up with like three different things to test or something, and we'll test them and see how it goes. The other thing is this is a partnership with European Organization Design Forum. And so we want to just better leverage that. So we might do something along the lines to just connect to them more, because they're doing the same thing we're doing, and there's no reason not to. You know, this is fairly minor in the realm of possibilities that we have.
I do like that you can opt in to listen only, or I commit to reading the articles. Yeah. I mean, I definitely feel committed when I say, yes, I'm committed. Like I'm getting that done, you know?
Well, and maybe it's, we specify too, don't feel like you have to have read all five. You know, if there's a couple that catch your attention and those are the ones you want to engage around, then you're very welcome to be able to do that. And so maybe that is your comment, Selena, about, is it too many articles to get through? Is five the right number? Is it the wrong number? That's a great question.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we're going to come up with a couple scenarios to test, and we'll see how it goes. So.
Yeah, and I'm okay with the number. I just want to make sometimes the length of some articles is a little put off.
If you have a 35-page white paper that's an academic read,
I thought of that too. I thought we should let people know we could put a
Selena's like, yes, please.
Yeah. We could put a predictor in there of this one will take this, this is how long it is, and maybe we just let people know more up front. That might be a way too. But anyway, we'll try a few different things. We have a plan.
And I did get a comment from someone who's now left the call, but they were saying that English wasn't their first language. They weren't necessarily so comfortable speaking. So I don't know, also, just encouraging people more to share their thoughts in the chat as well, versus having to maybe speak when people aren't maybe so comfortable doing so.
Yeah, that would be an interesting thing. For European ODF has developed some regional chapters. And it maybe this is something that some of the regional chapters think about replicating for their smaller communities, and offering the opportunity to do it in a first language.
Okay, well, lots of ideas. Thank you.
Yep.
Well, Hamish, thank you so much for jumping in and help. Normally, we don't have a discussion in August because it's usually the book edition. And so my understanding is, since Paul Tolchinsky is on his farewell tour, he was always the one that kind of drove the book collection and the book club and the book edition for the newsletter. So we'll have to see if somebody else jumps in to kind of take on that role, as he's officially retiring, apparently, at the end of this year. So thank you for jumping in and filling in for us with short notice. And for everybody who was able to speak up, thank you. And for the three of you that stayed online who weren't able to join in, really appreciate you being here, and hopefully you found some value in it. If you have any questions about the community or about the particular offerings, I'll stay on the line for a few minutes here after we wrap up, and happy to answer any questions that might come up. But thanks, everyone. Have a great rest of your day. May your summer wrap up soon. I'm hoping mine does.
Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, stay cool, Tanya.
We try hard here in Phoenix, but we don't Thanks expect everyone. To.
Thanks for organizing, Tanya.
Oh, you bet, Selena. Happy to be here.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great afternoon.